Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Wrecks Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com. I try to upload an episode once a week, once every other week, just kind of depending upon my schedule. Also, the most efficient way to get the show is to enter Warman Kickfighting Show into your iTunes search engine, and my show pops right up. So, I'll get right into it. I'm going to talk a lot about results and things that went down. And, of course, we had the big glory event in Holland as the return of Badr Hari was successful. As you could say, unanimous decision victory over Hesti Haggis. Those would be 29-28 on one card and 30-27 on the others. So I was curious to comment on this because I really saw, I was surprised at how much I saw it. All over the card, all over the Twitter world. But a lot of people were disappointed in Badr Hari's performance. A lot of them were saying, well, if he fights like this, there's no way he's going to beat Rico Verheerven. And I think it's a different version of him. First and foremost, Badr Hari fought in a way that he could have success with Hesti Haggis after having such a long layoff. We're talking about a guy who's been fighting, well, you know what, two times in the last 3 years, you know, legal troubles. We're talking about prison visits, you know, our prison, long prison stays, not visits. He's not going to see anybody. We're talking about long prison stints. He should be affected physically. The whole time Hesti's been training, preparing for fights, winning them, losing them. He's been an active combat sports, figure these last 3-4 years, whereas Badr Hari has, been able to fight sometimes, has been in legal trouble other times, and he's been in fights where he's seen interested and fights where he's seen disinterested. It's just a different game. Everything's a little bit different for Badr Hari right now at this stage in his life. So now, legal trouble finally behind him, he can sit down and focus on being a prize fighter. As far as the action of the fights go, I really did like the body work that he put together. I like that he threw the strong combinations downstairs. He's always been, he started off the fight, with his normal sharpness. The sticks, the jab low kick, the cross switch kick. He's always been good at that. He's had the basics down. So for people who think that Badr Hari's like, a guy who kind of, swings wild and finds his big shots, he does have that in his game. He 100% has that in his game. Even when he was a heavyweight fighting around, 90 kgs, 88 kgs, 95 kgs, and he was going against those big guys. He was always able to turn over his punches and throw, strong, fast, and violent even before he had the physical frame. But I thought I've always felt the thing that made him special, the thing that helps him to win rounds. And to me, your fighter identity is the individual that wins rounds. If you won 100 rounds, what would it look like? Whatever it looks like is what your identity is as a fighter. It's not a guy who goes out there and wins KO by KO all the time. The guy who wins with KO all the time is known for being a KO fighter. But in the end, if you've got to put rounds together, which is really what happens at the elite level, what does your style look like? And your style won't look like winning by KO every round. You've got to figure out how to land successful offense consistently, and that is your fight identity. Your fight reputation could be you win by KO over time, but your fight identity is, how does someone game plan to go against this skill set that you bring on a regular basis to win rounds? Badr Hari, in the very beginning of his career, all the way through to his early K1 runs, he has always had down jab low kick, hook low kick, and cross switch kick extremely well. Our 1-2 switch kick, I add that one there. He has them down, and he throws them mean, strong, and fast, and he believes in his speed, and he believes in his power, and he believes in his quickness. He has been able to do that even at this stage. And when he came out with some sharp, straight punches, and he put the switch kick in there and the single kick by itself and the jab low kick, like, that part of his game has not left no matter what's been going on in his legal career. He has got it down. For a heavyweight, he is committed to those basics. To this day, I always feel, and I always tell people, go sit down and watch Badr Hari back when he was, fighting for, or he was the champion, I believe, at the time. Back when he was the Glory 100kg champion, and he fought Glabe Fitoza. Watch that fight. It is technical execution. It is the basics executed at a high level on a heavyweight. When he came in here with Hesti, he showed that early. Then Hesti, if anything, I thought Hesti was the one who committed to throwing the wider, hard shots. He was a period of time where he, I want to say in the first round, where he backed Hari up, threw a lot of big power shots. Has he stayed by, or Hari stayed behind the guard? Has he continued to work that part of his game? He scored low kicks here and there. If anything, you know, Hesdy had said it before, his whole game plan going into this fight was to attack Badr Hari's mentality. He said, I want to break him. I want him to not want to be in there with me. I'm going to be in his face. I'm going to make him throw offense. I'm going to throw offense, and I'm going to wear him down. I want to beat him with the mental game. Hari came in and just executed clean kickboxing early. Then Hesdy took over portions of the round, particularly the end of the first round, with his combination kick game. And then it just seemed like Hesdy was thrown off by the commitment to the body that Badr Hari put together. He stopped wasting his time throwing big, heavy shots on Hesdy's guard, something that he did in the first fight. This time, he's focused downstairs, and then it would open up the opportunity for, you know, some big punches upstairs. Not the KO shots that he, you know, that we're used to seeing him throw in the past, but things that were opened up by clean boxing that led to another clean boxing score. So he really did a good job of committing to the body. They got in a clinch. He'd pop a few knees here and there. Timely low kicks. But for the most part, his game was predicated on just outworking Hesdy Hargiz, who was looking for a KO shot, and it got away from the combination low kick guy that made him, you know, special. Hesdy is still a good fighter, still going to put on a good show, still going to be a name that you're going to want to see people compete against in the heavyweight division. You know, Thomas Mosny got a victory on this card. That's a perfect example of a fight that could happen with Hesdy. That's what's next for him. Badr Hari, no one has any clue. We have no clue. I work for Glory. I have no idea what they're thinking, what's going on next for Badr Hari. Everything works. And I think that I saw, you know, Tyrone Spong. I saw him in an interview where he said he'd do it if you, you know, give him the check, he'd do it. And, of course, that's Tyrone. He's a prize fighter. He's always down to do it. That would be a huge fight. I would even say that fight would be bigger than the Rico rematch because we've seen Rico fight. That would probably be one of the biggest fights in the history of kickboxing if Tyrone Spong returned to fight against Badr Hari. That would be awesome. The Rico rematch, they could do it. And I think that for people who are sold that Hari would lose if he fought that one, he won the first round when they fought last time. And clearly Rico was, you know, turned it up in round two. And Rico does well with battling back from adversity. But Hari came out, won that first round. He would game plan and prepare different for Rico. No question about it. No question about it. But I think that I would wait on that fight, personally. Sorry about that. Phone just started ringing. Please apologize for that delay. Just had a phone call. Somebody asking for fights. That's just kind of the nature of the games. What I do. So combat sports keeps on rolling. So back to the action. We're talking about Badr Hari. A Remy Bunjowski rematch would be a lot of fun. And Remy said that he's retired and he wouldn't do it. Remy would do it. I think if they threw Remy the right money, he'd do it. Now, again, he's 2-0 against Badr, so maybe he wants to ride off into the sunset as a guy who didn't lose to Badr Hari, something similar to Buster Douglas. I remember there were a couple of times where they were trying to make the fight with Buster Douglas and Mike Tyson again, and Buster just thought differently of it, thinking that's my one moment in the history of this sport. And in the history of sports in that situation, as far as that big upset. So maybe that's kind of what Remy's thinking is, but I think that that would be a good option for Badr. If they want Badr to have a fight where he can get some work in, the Thomas Mosny fight would be really good too. So definitely some good options. I recommend pretty much anything for Badr Hari works for the next fight, as long as it doesn't come, you know, in December. If he can get that second one in the middle of the summer, that would be awesome. And I know they're not using him on France, but they should really consider it, because I watched Badr Hari fight live in France, and they've got a pretty good Moroccan fan base, and they came out and they supported him, and the crowd went crazy, and that's when I realized just how much of a superstar Badr Hari is. The crowd and the way they reacted, I'm not just talking about adults, I'm talking about young girls, and I'm talking about you know, families. Like, everybody was all about Badr Hari when I watched him fight, and his return fight at that particular time in Lyon against Tony Gregory. So Badr Hari, still a star. He says things that makes you love him. There was the thing this week where they asked him about going to MMA or fighting a guy in boxing, and he said that he loved kickboxing and those guys should come fight him in kickboxing. And he says, I love MMA, I love boxing. But man, he says, I love being a kickboxer. And I would love for the opportunity to keep being a part of the best fighting sport in the world. When you hear Badahari say stuff like that, it just reminds you how much this guy is beloved and how much he's the highest of highs and the lowest of lows in kickboxing. And I think that that's why he's always going to be intriguing. He's always going to be the guy. So, Badahari, anything you do next is a win for combat sports. We're going to go ahead and go into the four-man tournament as Ivan Denenberg and Well, I'll go ahead and go through the whole tournament for back. Denenberg is a very talented fighter based out of Holland, fights at Pietrus Gym. Pietrus is one of the better coaches in the world that not a lot of people know about. Denenberg meets Jimmy Vannoy, or Vannoy. I've heard it pronounced many different times. And I thought Denenberg clearly won two rounds, and I thought Vannoy had some good moments in one of the rounds, but I like Denenberg's boxing and the consistency. Jimmy had his moments, just like he did in his debut in Glory when he went against Alim Nabiyev. He had his moments. He can get his body kick here and there. He can get his boxing scores here and there. He's tricky with his southpaw offense, but it's just the volume that Denenberg puts together. And Denenberg, despite having thin legs, he could take the low kicks pretty good. He has timely kicks, timely knees, but really it's the boxing that really kind of separates him on the scorecard. That was how he got the victory over Jimmy Vannoy. Tongjai gets a victory over Alan Shinson, and it was a split decision, and I was not sure where this was going to go. I actually thought that Alan was going to take it. He threw some, you know, got his power shot scores in. Tongjai was game. He was able to add a little bit more diversity to his offense, pop in a good power single kick here and there, whereas I thought Alan kicked very little and focused more on his power boxing. When they went to the cards, I did think that Alan was going to get the victory. I thought that they were going to call his name, and again, this was not a robbery in any way. I thought that Alan probably scored just enough, but Tongjai was able to get the scores, both in boxing, both in power kicks, and he gets the victory. He moves on and fights Ivan Denenberg, and Denenberg wins a decision I thought was clear. One had a 29-28, but I thought 30-27 on all the cards was justified. The interesting thing about Tongjai is, and this particular fight, normally you see a online community that really follows the Thai boxers and the Thai style, and it follows them into kickboxing where they feel that they don't get their due. And when you see how so many people respond, both positively and negatively, towards how Thais are scored in kickboxing, it's just a community that feels that they are really good at scoring and not getting credit for it in Glory, in K1. Here, online, there was no arguments from anybody saying that Tongjai had beat Ivan. Denenberg did work. He did really, really good kickboxing. He's going to be a really good, fight, or he's going to be a really good fight for the champion, or for the number one contenders. Anything that they want to do with him is a win. We can do the Kangulo fight because, I'm going to talk about a little bit later, Nabiyev is going to fight for the title next. But a Kangulo fight would be good. Nicky Holtzkin fight, I don't know if they want to go in that direction, but they could if they wanted to. They have a lot of really good options that they can do with Denenberg against elite guys. And let's not forget, we still have Mirko Grunhardt as a possibility. So go ahead, give him another top guy. Don't worry about putting him in a title shot just yet. We move on to the fight I mentioned a moment ago. Alim Nabiyev versus Cedric Doumbé. Split decision victory for Alim Nabiyev. One had 28-29. The rest had a 29-28 for the young Russian. I've always felt, and I'm going to go ahead and beat a dead horse, but you guys have heard me say it before, I have been hyping Alim Nabiyev since he's been in his mid-teens. I've always known that this kid is special. He had got an interesting, his movement, his charisma, his boxing quickness, and his ability to find the timing on his step knees has always been special. Cedric Doumbé knows how to sell himself, knows how to talk, knows how to mix up his offense from boxing to kickboxing, his setup to his low kicks, the way he can switch stance and sell the same attack from a different stance. Cedric Doumbé is the truth. This was two high-level, world-class kickboxers putting on a great kickboxing fight, technically and skill-wise. It may not have been the all-action, this guy killing this guy type of, you know, barn burner that we get from, you know, Zambidi Shahid. This was just technical execution by two really good guys. Cedric Doumbé clearly wins round one for me. He was able to get the low kick going, which is really good against Dabayev, because sometimes Dabayev's stance gets a little bit wide, and he focuses on the boxing so much that he lets his weight sit a little bit wide, and he can take the low kicks, and sometimes when he takes them, it'll turn his whole body because he was sitting so wide. So Doumbé did the good job there, but my favorite thing was the low-high combinations. He kept playing shots where he would score, like, you know, power hand downstairs with the left and then come up with the right hook, and he scored it several times to great effect in round one with Nabayev. Then, of course, we had some gamesmanship. Nabayev missed a kick. Cedric looked out of the ring like he usually does. Doumbé threw a kick. It was parried by Alim. Alim then looked to the crowd, did some sort of playing around, and came back. They were themselves. But in round two, I really thought that Nabayev's pressure and boxing really scored well. He got the timing on Cedric Doumbé trying to find the kick, and he was able to score consistently. And then round three, he really took over the fight, I thought. Boxing scores came clean, some good step knees, one that had Doumbé, I won't say he was in trouble, but it scored good enough to shut his offense down for a little bit. Great fight. Alim Dabayev gets the victory. He should be fighting for the glory title in France against Gregorian. And Gregorian's got a tough night ahead of him. Gregorian's your champ. He throws that power. He's going to, you know, he's all or nothing. He's going to bring the war. Alim Dabayev is going to bring the slickness. He's going to bring the combination flow. He's going to try to run people in the knees. That could get him caught. Maybe throws a knee and Gregorian comes over the top. No matter what, you're seeing the best fighters in the world. And you are seeing a guy, Nabayev, who at 22 years old, I mean, he's going to be a star in kickboxing for a very, very long time. And he gets a victory over Cedric Doumbé, who's 24 years old, which just shows how awesome kickboxing is right now for new young stars. Perfect segue as we go into Muhammad Jiraiya, 21 years old, I'm going to say, as he gets a victory over Miles Simpson, 29-28 on three of the cards, 30-27 on the other one. So I've always felt, this is me personally, that Muhammad Jiraiya is better suited at a smaller weight class. That's just my personal opinion. So I'm not sure if you guys noticed that slight hesitation, but we just had a whole bunch of crazy stuff, a lot of moves that just happened for Glory 52 that I had to take care of. Going to be building on some fights, and we're going to be doing some things a little bit different. I'm not allowed to announce it, so please don't ask me. But yes, that's kind of what the goal is for this card. Going to have some new names, and it should be a lot of fun. I like how things are moving around. Should be good. But definitely, we're trying to make sure that LA show is great. And I just had to stop this podcast to go make some moves and add some fights to the undercard and change some things on the main card. So definitely want to get back into the kickboxing action, but I had to do a small break to help on that glory card. So anyways, back to what we were talking about with Muhammad Jiraiya. I personally feel that Muhammad Jiraiya would be better suited at 70 kgs. That's my personal opinion. When I looked at his body physically, you can see a little bit of weight, you know, on the Muay Thai shorts and the kickboxing shorts, right around, you know, the stomach area, on the outside, the handles above the hips. But the combination flow is still there. The KO pop isn't what it used to be when he fought at, you know, 70 kgs and just below it. But he can still flow. And sometimes it seems he gets a little tired, and maybe that's just him getting used to. He talked about the nerves. He talked about how he was worried. He did feel the pressure a little bit. You know, he had all the hype, and of course everybody knows him from Infusion, which kind of brought his name up. So he wanted to go out there and fight well and do well. And he did have some really good moments. Miles Simpson was good and gamey, threw good volume. Simpson just struggles as far as KO pop goes. But as far as, you know, bringing a good fight, he was right there. And I did give him one of the rounds. I can't remember what round it was. But overall, I thought Muhammad Jiraiya did his thing. I thought that he got the victory. Not the most spectacular, guns blazing, you know, fight that you want to see. But sometimes it happened. Thomas Mosley was able to get a victory over Daniel Skvor earlier on the card. And it was such a just workmanlike victory that as I went down the list, I realized that I just kind of skated right over that fight. Thomas Mosley, good victory for him. You know, I want to see what happens with him next. As I said, Hezzy Hegas is a good option. There's some American guys I think would be good options for Mosley as far as just continuing to move him as a kickboxing brand. So good stuff for Mosley, and we will see what happens to him down the road. In that same way, Muhammad Jiraiya, just got to keep him active. There are some guys who, you know, what would be a pretty fun fight for him, just as far as the activity and dealing with the guy who's going to throw a lot of combos? Richard Abraham from America. I think that would be a good fight to make Jiraiya use some different tools and make him, you know, find the kickboxing flow. Not to mention, if he drops down to 150, you know, to 154, I really love a lot of the options there for him. So there's a lot of good stuff. I mean, there's a lot of good things we could do with Muhammad Jiraiya. But activity is the main thing. When you've been gone for this amount of time, you want to be active, you want to come back, and you want to really put on the kind of, I won't say the kind of performances as much as the kind of consistency that he had when he made himself great. So I know that those performances will come when the consistency comes, when he starts fighting regularly again. And it should be good. I'm excited to see what comes from him. He's very talented. Dzyani Bastadi gets another victory over Anil Kabri. Kabri came out fighting extremely well. Really, really good. Like, he was set on his combos. He threw strong. Bastadi, it took Bastadi a little bit to get going. Kabri would land a low kick. Bastadi would try to land a low kick back, but Kabri was waiting on the boxing the moment the kick came. There was some movement. Bastadi started to find a better handle on him in the second half of the round. And then all of a sudden, they go into a combination series where there's a slight push by Bastadi, who fires a high kick. He'd went for it earlier. Like, he saw it because Kabri was doing a lot of movement. This is a technical thing, I'll tell you guys, because I also tell it to a lot of my fighters. If you have a guy who is using a lot of head movement, like a boxer in kickboxing, got to start kicking out his head. Kick out his head, kick out his shoulders. You got to make it uncomfortable for him to move like that. A lot of people think to go for low kicks, but if his base is good, he can eat the low kick and hit you with boxing. But if someone's doing all that head movement, their base is usually a little wide with how their upper body can absorb a kick. It's not as strong because you're keeping yourself in a position where you can pivot. So if you see that, throw high kicks at the shoulder and at the head. Not necessarily to score a kill shot, but start by there. Kill shot might come later, but start by stopping that movement. So he threw it early, and it was a really, really Bazooka Joe saw it. Joe Valtellini, the commentator, he mentioned he saw it as soon as he did it. And then earlier and then later, there was an exchange. A slight push away, and besides, fired the high kick up. Bang. Landed perfect on the neck. Kabri goes down. Not a one-hitter quitter all the way out, but bad shape, can't get up and return to action. Really good stuff by Dzyani Bastadi. I want to see more of this kid. I want to see more of him. This is a good move. He was in a tournament, didn't go his way in the tournament. They keep him active. They keep him fighting. He's doing like 4 or 5 fights a year. That's how you're going to build him. Just take your time. Keep giving him out there. Maybe he gets another contender tournament. Anything they do with Bastadi is good stuff, because they're just moving him and growing, and they're not rushing him towards the title. Every move they've made with Bastadi, I'm trying to say they, knowing that I'm a part of it, but they, in terms of, you know, the rest of the team and talent ops, how they've match made him, he's been moved well. I'm excited to see what happens with Bastadi down the road. Side note, as they see Muhammad Jiraiya's name, I need to do a retraction and apologize for something. When Muhammad Jiraiya had his hearing, in the hearing, they had mentioned that they thought that he should go to another gym and get away from the people that he was with before. And I thought that was a little bit weird to tell someone to move gyms. I thought that was like a business decision that they shouldn't be a part of. I then learned, and I got a tweet about it, and then I did some research on it, that is very common for people in hearings to suggest, all right, we will let you go, or we'll give you a break in this area if you get away from these athletes, you know, if you get away from these individuals, if you get away from this coach, if you commit yourself to these people who are good people, you know, like I seen that, not to suggest that the other people are bad people, but people who've got a reputation for doing good things. I am starting to realize that is very, very common. And someone said it to me on Twitter, and then I did some research on it. It is common for a hearing to say, hey, we will give you less time if you do these steps. My apologies, I was wrong in that situation, and I wanted to make sure that I said it. Muhammad Dry, of course, at Collision Gym now, decided to, whether he took that advice beforehand or it was a decision that he made on his own, he did move to another gym. But I wanted to mention that before I finished the card. Pissarro Glunder gets a victory over Victor Pinto, 29-28 on all five cards. Glunder, interesting, because Glunder took a low blow, and a bad low blow. He did a kick, he followed it with a spinning hook kick, and then just a complete accident, super complete accident. Victor Pinto was throwing a offensive shot the moment that kick came up, like the moment it came up. So it just happened. Glunder took all of his time this time. He was not in a hurry. We had a long kind of wait, and then the opportunity to score a big offensive score came later. The opportunity to get back in the fight with clean offense came later. Got the boxing going. Was really fighting well in space. I thought his jab was snappy. I thought his kick was snappy. I thought that Pinto was scoring because he throws a lot more volume than his brother. I thought he was scoring in moments, but I thought Glunder was so strong. Then I thought in the second half of the second round that it got sloppy and that they turned into a clinch fest and the fight got a little bit ugly. And then Pinto, a lot of people gave him round three because he really started to just let it go. He just kind of went for it. And Glunder wasn't as offensively effective. He slowed down and he scored a lot of knees. And who knows what that low blow did to him as far as stamina goes. Anyways, Glunder gets the victory. He talked about afterwards having his dad in the corner. Of course, his dad, the bad boy, had a lot of fights, fought in kickboxing, fought in MMA. Glunder also talked about how he made a mistake when he fought in France and he took the shot behind the head. Being a fighter and a warrior, he tried to rush back. And as soon as he rushed back, Dylan Salvador knew that he had him hurt, just went right after him and scored the knockdown. And he said, this time I'm taking all of my time. And it really, really worked out well for him. Like, really well. Came back, got the victory. Glunder is a consistent, solid kickboxer at 143. Glory can use him on a regular basis. He's got some world-class wins. Glunder's the truth. He'll be around for quite some time. Kevin Van Hickerman got the night started off right with a big-time KO over Bart Van Der Kroon. Van Der Kroon, this is kind of his Glory debut, had a B-class, C-class resume before it. Just give him some time. Like, same as Pinto. Pinto can fight. Pinto's going to match up well and get some victories down the road. Bart Van Der Kroon's going to just need some time, going to get some different opposition. But he ran into a guy in Kevin Van Hickerman who just brought it, was clean with his kickboxing from the beginning. His boxing scores were scoring right away. He got Kroon hurt early and was able to finish him later in the first round. Just want to see more of him. I don't need any move. He could be in a contender tournament, anything that they want to do. But I would prefer them give him more of a Bastardi treatment where they move him steady. But anything's good. Any decision's good with Hickerman as far as how they want to use him, whether they use him on the Holland card or a Dutch card or a French card. All that is good as far as I'm concerned. I'm a big fan of getting this opportunity to showcase and start the card off right. So definitely good stuff. And, we got Glory at the end of this month, Glory 52. That's world class. I'm excited to see what comes from this show. I'm excited to see what happens down the road. It should be really, really good. Next card I'm going to talk about, we are going to go to, I got two I'm going to break down. I'm going to take you to some U.S. kickboxing and Muay Thai. We're going to go to Friday Night Fights. Friday Night Fights is a long time kickboxing promotion. I fought in Friday Night Fights a million years ago. They've been doing their thing for a long time. And they put on great fights with, got a lot of guys from the New York area, but lately they've been bringing in, European opposition and, not necessarily European opposition, more Canadian opposition and all over the States. They've done a good job. Every once in a while, they bring some guys in from England and so on. But this card had some pretty notable names that I want you guys to know. Ajin Topic, of course, was the champion. I don't know if he still is a champion because line fights a little bit weird as far as how to kind of keep up with their belts. But Topic was their champion. He got a victory over Travis Clay, 49-46, and he won their lightweight title. Topic, good fighter. I want to see him compete on a regular basis. Very, very talented. The opposition, of course, will reveal more. Maybe fights for glory one day. Maybe he fights K1. Whatever the opportunity is, I want to see Topic compete more on a regular basis. Troy Sheridan, Canadian-based Troy Sheridan, gets a victory over Paweł Zawistowski. I believe I got that right. Zawistowski gets a victory. 30-27 on two cards, 29-28 the other one. Troy Sheridan has got all the tools to fight in glory on a regular basis. He could do Japan. He's got good kickboxing. He's fought at pretty much everybody there is to fight in Canada. You know, Shane Campbell and all the elites up that way. So him on this fight card, and I talked to Joe Valentini about it. Joe wanted to see how he did here before he considered Joe Valentini as his coach. Wanted to see how he did in this Friday night fight to see if they wanted to move him forward. So definitely good stuff for Troy Sheridan. I'm excited to see more of them. Aurel Abreu gets a victory over Alex Berrios in a split decision. These fights are all on UFC Fight Pass, so if you've got it, go check it out. You can find it in the UFC Fight Pass library. Awesome stuff, and I'll get into that a little bit more later as far as what that means as far as the significance towards kickboxing. But run off a couple more victories. Terrell Harewood gets a victory over Jair Rodriguez. And then a split decision victory for Malcolm Hill over Mark Marrero. And then Grace Avine gets a victory over Jillian Bersaudet, 29-28 unanimous decision. Good stuff there for the fight card, but there's nothing more important than the fight pass part. Because this and Triumphant, which I'm going to talk about in a little bit, we now have two U.S.-based kickboxing promotions that are now on a venue where you can stream and watch their fights on a regular basis. The sport is growing. Kickboxing is growing. It's doing good. Muay Thai is growing. It's doing good. More people are getting access to it. More people are getting the opportunity to see stand-up fighting. And that is huge. That is huge for us. So definitely good stuff. And New York, Friday Night Fights, they were live. You know, Triumphant, they kind of play on a delay. But they were live for Friday Night Fights, so shout out to them. They've been doing it for a long time, and now they're getting this opportunity to get a showcase on a venue where a lot of people get a hold of it. So if you don't got Fight Pass, get it, because they're getting so much content. We're not just talking about the UFC cards and the UFC library. We're talking about the totality of kickboxing, some MMA cards from around the world, like they're doing. I mean, and it don't work for them. I'm just saying they're doing a good job of giving the platform to more than just MMA, and kickboxing and Muay Thai has really stepped up and jumped in there. Next fight I'm going to talk about is the Triumphant card that took place in California. That's where they do a lot of their events. I think it was Oakland, California, the Oakland Marriott Center, City Center. And I'll go ahead and go down the card. Jenna Fabian gets a knockout over Shemaine Tweed in the second round. Jenna Fabian is very talented. She is, if I'm remembering correctly, she fights at CSA and just a talented, doesn't have as many fights overall as Tweed, but Tweed fought MMA. Fabian, big, strong athlete, very good. I'm excited to see her compete. Hopefully we'll see more of her down the road. Anthony Njokuani gets a victory over Sunny Singh. Njokuani, still talented, still able to win in Muay Thai rules. Hopefully we can get him in glory. I've thought about trying to get him on this most recent card. Just didn't work out. But I'm glad that he's fighting and he's being consistent and he's enjoying the stand-up sport again. Asatin Pau has got all the tools. This kid from out of Florida is very good, very flashy. Got good kickboxing skill. He gets a victory over Nick Chastain. Chastain, of course, had that good run early in his lion fight career. And then, of course, he ran till, you know, some ups and downs. And that's what happens in the combat sport. Fought MMA a couple times. He's just keeping himself busy as a prize fighter. But, nevertheless, there's nothing more important than the fact that Asatin Pau was able to beat a named guy and move forward. And he's a guy who I definitely have my eye on. Asatin Pau. I had called them to ask them this. I made the mistake. Please forgive if you listen to this podcast. Asatin Pau is his name. He's definitely a talented kid from out of Florida, and I want to see more of him. Eric Luna gets a victory over Joseph Gogo, and we'll definitely see more of Luna. This is my first time really getting to see him on a larger showcase. I'd seen him once before, so good win for him. Zach Bunnell, who fought in Glory back in the day. He gets a victory over Chris Brigette. Very talented. Bunnell, again, another guy who's based out of CSA Gym, but has got his own gym in Nevada. Want to see more of Bunnell. Got to keep staying active. Sean Clamaco gets a victory over Diego Piez by knockout. Everybody loves the knockouts. Only had a few of these on this card. Four is pretty solid for a card. Sean gets KO. Yumiko Kono gets a victory over Janet Todd. Split decision. That one was close. Darren Ueno Yama gets a victory over Reshiz Narine by TKO in the first round. And Jamie Feeb gets a TKO victory over Nick Kaluza. So that is the triumphant card. Quick breakdown of it. Really good stuff. Really proud of some of the, you know, the action that happened there. And just, again, another U.S.-based kickboxing organization, Muay Thai organization, that's doing it on a consistent level. We're going to go over to Bangkok. I had mentioned this card last time, but I wasn't able to finish it. It was going on as I was doing the podcast. So I'm going to go ahead and go to it now, as Phoenix Fighting Championship took place in Bangkok, Thailand. Yusuf Bahonim gets a victory over Nepokau, and it's TKO in the third round. Yusuf's on fire. He is their champion. He is a 160 champion for Rogers Stadium. He's just on fire. It's his moment. It's his world. He's doing exceptionally well. He is he gets a WBC and the Phoenix FC middleweight title for this victory. He's the truth, and he's winning by stoppage. That's the other thing. It's not that he's technically clean, plays the game, and then he turns it up, and he's able to get guys out of there. Yusuf on fire. He's making his case for being one of the all-time great French Muay Thai fighters. His brother, Yusin Bohinim, gets a victory over Steve Banks. That was for the WBC heavyweight world title. Now, I can't keep up with the WBC title. That thing's all over the place. It's hard to keep up with. They'll disappear and they'll come back, and they'll disappear and come back. WBC, it's, you know, you just need more consistency for your title. But this was really big. Now, my favorite thing about Yassin does not look the part of a fighter. He's got some, you know, he's got a gut, he's got some rolls, but man, this kid can fight. And I watched him fight in Lyon when I watched Muay Thai Car out there. He's always been very good. He's always been very strong. He's deceivingly tough. Like just, you would think that he wouldn't be able to go round. You would think that something would, you know, affect him because, you know, his physical frame. But he just stays right in there, and he can bang it out with people, and he can score, get in clinch, or score in space with single kicks and his boxing. He's a talented kid. Good stuff for Yusin. Good stuff for Yusuf. Very, very big weekend for the both. Saxon gets a victory over Yild Kalafet. I did not get to see this fight, but I wanted to bring up the fact that Saxon got a victory here. Sakman Cole also won on this card. Rumbong, Ek McKen also won in this card. I'm just throwing these names out there because I wasn't able to watch all of this fight card, but I was able to finally get a hold of the fights right at the top. And Mohamed Sueng get a victory over Singh Soriya from Moore Ratnapandit Gym. So definitely good stuff for Phoenix 5, and I'm telling you, Yusuf on fire right now. Anything this kid does is gold. So definitely want to see more from him down the road, more of him competing on the highest level. As for this weekend, we've got what is going to be one of the longest tournaments you're ever going to hear about in your life. Kunlun 70kg tournament gets underway. It's huge. Shout out to Kixie. Follow Kixie. He is a guy who does a good job of posting GIFs and fight results, and he's putting a tournament field together that you can help follow the Kunlun, because that's only difficulty. Kunlun does shows on a regular basis. Fighters get paid. They get paid well for competing for them. They've been doing their job of getting them out there. The only problem is it's hard to keep track of what they're doing, what tournament's going on, what leads to what, when does it end. It's hard. So Kixie's going to put together a tournament field. He's going to help us to follow it along throughout the year. But in the end, we're starting something in March that's probably going to finish in November or December, and it is 64 people, like the NCAA basketball tournament here in the U.S., That's how big this tournament is. It begins this weekend as we go through Block 1 and Block 2. I'll go ahead and mention some of the fights. Shinotaro Matsukura gets Hei Yifei of China. We've got Alam Chavez gets Victor Nagby. Nagby's been doing it for a while. Nagabi. I've heard it pronounced so many different ways, but I'm going to go ahead and go with Nagby. He is a talented guy, Australian-based fighter. He's been fighting in China, has fought all over. I really like him. Very talented guy. He's doing it at 70 kgs. The other part, Block 2, Michael Kumar goes against Feng Jili, and then Nikolai Kamesa goes against Johan Dre. That's getting this 70 kg tournament going. Definitely good stuff. Single fights include Kenta Yamada against Feng Li, Jordan Cranio against Wei Ninghui, and then we've got Georgie Capenia against Wing Feng, and then the last one I'm going to talk about, Sammy versus Law Chosen also on this card. That's, I think, is going to be the main event for the whole event. But the one that I really want to talk about, Sammy might be first. Sammy and Law Chosen must be first. Forgive. I didn't get that breakdown. My apologies. But the main fight I wanted to talk about for this card, in terms of world significance, is Leticia Madien. She goes against Wang Qihan. Wang Qihan, of course, is the KO hitter for the women in all of combat sports. She's one of the biggest crackers. Like, she's one of the girls who can sit there, bite down in the mouthpiece, or not bite down in the mouthpiece, and still land big, heated shots. Her left hook is legit. She is one of the better KO fighters of all time in kickboxing. She really does bring that kind of power. And she brings it against other girls who've got good size and bring good heat. She going against Leticia, who Leticia's got that victory over a weird victory over Anissa Mexen, if I remember correctly. Over Anissa Hadeau. And I think that a lot of people didn't think it was going to go her way, but it did. We'll see what happens to her in this next outing. But Wang Qihan is the truth. So anything she does is gold. And that is taking place in Sanya. And should be a good one. I'm excited for Kunlun. It's going to be on Fight TV, so it should be something that people can get a hold of and follow. Definitely good stuff in the kickboxing world. A couple other notables. It's going to be a long breakdown when I do it. But on the 21st, of course, we're getting close to K-Festa, the first big, huge K-1 card. And they just took out a 9-hour TV slot. You got to be kidding me. 9 hours. So you got to be a bum at work, and you can still go home and watch some of this. You know what I'm saying? Like, that is a long time. 9 hours. Is it a holiday? Are people not supposed to be in school that day? That's going to take a while. Hopefully, you know, it's not the, you know, the end of the world, but I'm literally laughing as I think about this. That is a super, super long card. But, you know, in the end, they are trying to get the combat sport out there. They're trying to get their stars out there. And I'm not going to talk about the breakdown until I get the full results. I'm trying to save, until I get closer. But, man, that is a lot of watching. Other things going on in the kickboxing world. It's actually taking place as we speak. It's happened to me a couple times. But Bukau is fighting Jeanne Risco as he makes his debut here for is it going down? Hold on. It is in Abu Dhabi. Right, cool. He's making his debut for Infusion, and that's taking place today. We've got Amber Kitchen. I saw that she won already. And then at the top of the card, well, I'll go ahead and work through it. It's kind of a mixture. Muhammad Batsui, let me see. Ilias Zaghari from Morocco is taking on Omar Karaz from Morocco. That should be a good one. There's some rookies, there's some talent rookies on here, so I'm not going to talk about the whole card. I'm just going to mention some. Levy Rickers takes on Bruno Cesano from Portugal. Levy's been on the card before. Ilias Enhachi from Morocco takes on Krubsut Fairtex, and that's for the 60 kg Infusion title. And then we've got Martin Bukos as he takes on Hicham Al-Chahali. That is heavyweight, and it's in a tournament. And then, Indy Sommelier, one of the better fighters in the world, takes on Redden Lakoubi. Lakoubi, of course, had a late entrance into the six-man, you know, tournament or league-style thing that they did for Intrusion last year that Tayfun Askin won. But Indy Sommelier won the big tournament, beating Superbon, becoming recognized as one of the best, at least top two or three 70 kg fighters in the world. This fight's actually going to take place at 72.5 kg, so 160 pounds. Luis Tavares is going to take on Fatih Ulusa from Turkey. That's for the heavyweight title. And then we've got Jane Risco against Bukal Becimek, and that is for the Infusion 70 kg title. Fun stuff. That's a good card. And again, it's going on as we speak. I'm not sure how far they are along, but that is elite stuff by Infusion. They brought it with this one, so I'm excited to see these. The event's being streamed on Fight TV, so I'll probably go back and watch the results later. But, man, really, really good stuff. So, going to go ahead and let me see. I was going to wrap this show up. I know there's a couple other loose results. Elias Belaid was in a tournament. He won his first round, and he lost to Hassan Toy in the second round. Toy was able to get the victory. Elias Belaid broke his hand in the second round of the first fight of the tournament, and because he's all warrior, he goes out there and fights with a broken hand, and he loses to Toy. But it just blows me away at the toughness of him, and big-time win for Hassan Toy. So I'm excited to see what happens to both of these guys down the road, and China, you're doing a great job of bringing us high-level kickboxing on a regular basis. So thanks, everybody, for listening. Thank you for following the podcast. I hope this episode is well-received and that you guys get it and continue to follow and support the kickboxing sport, support Muay Thai, support stand-up fighting, just support combat sports. Got some boxing going on this weekend, MMA, of course. Just get out there and be a part of this great and wonderful combat sport, and support your kickboxers, support your Muay Thai guys. If they're local and they're competing, go check them out. God bless everybody. Thank you for listening. Peace.